If you'd all take your seats, appreciate it. Moving on to item number 14, elk general and special permit seasons and regulations. Again, a decision with Dr. Jerry Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Once again, for the record, my name is Jerry Nelson. I'm the deer and elk section manager for the Dark Department. And also for the record, last agenda item, I misspoke. And Commissioner Dubia pointed out my mistake. The raw data that I shared at the Moses Lake meeting for DMU 2017 and 121, where the four-point minimum regulation is in place. Comparing 2011 to 2012, the participation did go down, but the buck harvest did go up. So that was my mistake. For agenda item 14, I'm presenting to you the WAC 232-28-358, the elk general seasons for 2013, and 232-28-360, the elk special permits for 2013. I'll show you the same graphs that I showed you for deer. A couple of interesting things about this. This is the statewide elk hunter estimates for the last 12 years. These are estimates of hunters going afield. One of the interesting things about this information is that this isn't tags sold. Our tags sold metric is fairly more consistent than this. And we typically sell in the neighborhood of 90 to 95,000 elk licenses, elk tags. But as you can see, an awful lot of those folks don't necessarily make it out in the field for all the reasons that you can imagine. The economy, the weather, personal, whatever. So we have an awful lot of folks that buy an elk license every year, but don't necessarily make it out into the field. Another interesting piece is the next slide, and that's the statewide elk harvest estimate. As you can see, that is a little flatter for the past 12 years, but one interesting piece about this is that for the first time in the past 12 years, we broke the 9,000 mark in total elk harvested, and so that hasn't happened for us in quite some time, and first time it's happened in the past 12 years, so found that interesting. One of the things that we talked about at the Moses Lake meeting was the Clackamas herd. There's an awful lot of interest in the Clackamas herd. We talked about some of the things that we've got going on in terms of total population as well as our bull subpopulation for that herd. At the time at the Moses Lake meeting, I only had the population estimates up through 2012. The survey work was completed between then and now, and so I now have the 2013 population estimate, so I'd like to show you that. So this is total population estimate, and as you can see, that number is continuing to go up, and one of the things you'll see in our recommendations is some additional antlerless opportunity for elk in the Clackam units. The bull population was up as well. However, we're still not seeing the bull population that we'd like to see in the Clackam herd. And so the target that we manage for in virtually all, not all, but virtually all of our elk populations is a post-hunt ratio of 12 to 20 bulls per 100 cows. The Clackam herd, in our estimates, was 10 bulls per 100 cows this year. So it is up, but it's still not where we want it to be. The other piece that I showed you in March was related to the true spike rule that was implemented in 2009, the commission adopted for the 2009 season. under the spike-only rule, historically, the percentage of yearling bulls in the general season harvested was running around 82% of the standing crop of yearling bulls. Since the implementation of the true spike rule, that average is now in the neighborhood of 67% of the yearling bull population. And so, but we wanted to share that latest for 2012 information with you as well. Again, I don't know the best way to just transition into this topic, and it's the most information that I have this afternoon. You heard a fair amount of testimony this morning and some input from Nate and our folks about and the director about what's lately going on with elk hoof disease in Southwest Washington. I provided this slide to you in March, so I'm not going to worry out with that again because I have some new information that I want to share. But I gave you a basic briefing in March about what we knew about the disease, what might be going on there, a lot of different possible causes for this kind of a malady, and some of the clues that we have so far in terms of the disease not seeming to behave like a lot of other things that folks were familiar with. No specificity in terms of gender or age or even which hooves on the animal might be afflicted or impacted. One of the things that I showed you at the March meeting was that we had a lot of next steps to go on investigating this problem. And so I want to go through a few of those next steps that have taken place since we met in March. And so one of the things that I mentioned before, and this took place and completed up last month, we collected some additional animals to do a fairly comprehensive additional testing. And so 9 animals were collected from what we considered the affected areas, 3 from unaffected areas that are on the west side, and of course 4 from some unaffected areas on the east side, both of those for comparison to the affected area animals. And just to show, and I think the director made a point of this earlier in his statement, but just to show that we're not operating in a vacuum here, the folks on the ground that helped with these collections and also sample processing and collection included veterinary staff from a variety of different entities. Of course, our Department of Fish and Wildlife, Washington State University, University of Washington, Oregon State University, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and even University of Wisconsin and Tufts University. And so all of those folks were on the ground helping us collect animals and helping us collect samples from those animals. We're starting to get some of those preliminary results back. The quickest and less informative information are the quick and easy is probably not the right word, the quick and routine things that are done in the laboratory. The epidemiologists and veterinarians involved with this didn't expect to see any real clues here, but there are steps that have to be taken to rule things out. And so some of the routine bacteria work done at Washington State University is done and no findings there. The radiology work that was conducted at Colorado State University is done. No real clues there up to this point. There is much more specialized bacteriology work that's being done for us at the University of Liverpool and Colorado State University. Those results are pending and will be coming to us this summer. And there may be a decision made to also do some of that work at the university in Australia as well. And I'm not sure whether that hinges on the results from Liverpool and CSU or if that's just coming at a later date. So you'll get more of that information at the June briefing. The virology work that's being done at the University of Wyoming, we should have by the end of this month. The initial histology work at CSU should be done at the end of May, but we also had some additional work on the next slide that that was done at WSU. And then, of course, in all of these examples, samples are being stored and saved in case there's additional future work that needs to be done that hasn't been accomplished yet. So saving and sampling, saving and storing samples appropriately in case there's future work needed. The histology work on organs, tissues, and muscle is completed, and that was done at WSU. That work suggested that they didn't see any significant inflammation or infection above the hooves of the animals. And this is interesting. It was even in the severely affected animals, those were their findings. There was trace mineral work done at the University of Idaho. That's been done before. We did it again. And low selenium and copper, and there were even some zinc things going on there that those levels were low. We expected them to be low. There's a potential there that this is a contributing factor, but the researchers involved don't see that as a smoking gun. It's more of a sideline contributing factor. Parasitology was done on all of the animals at WSU. That work is completed. Didn't see any differences in parasite loads in all three sample groups, and so nothing there. We didn't expect anything there, but the work still had to be done and those boxes checked. There is serology work that's going to be done at WSU and also at the USDA lab in Ames, Iowa. That is on the horizon. That work is getting in the queue and will be done soon. And then, of course, saving additional samples for future work. One of the points that was brought up at the March meeting, and we'd like to make that point again, and this was also a topic of this morning's public testimony, and that's the human health implications. The department is not in a position to assess or guarantee the quality of any wild game meat. That's just not something we can do. That's not something that we do. These aren't domestic animals. We're not the USDA. But some of the initial work, the tissues, the histology work that was done at WSU, they weren't seeing any kind of abnormalities that would suggest threats to humans. Is that conclusive? Absolutely not. But to reiterate what the director said, this is something that we're paying as close attention as we possibly can, and we'll continue to look into that to see if we can find any indications that there might be any issues. So that's something that's one of the things that's on the forefront of this hoof disease issue, and we will continue to look into that. So, that being said, on hoof disease, the elk season recommendations that we have for you haven't really changed except for a couple of floor changes from the March meeting. And so, for most of the seasons, they are status quo recommendations. Again, we're in the middle of a three-year package. We're not suggesting any major changes in hunting seasons. We did see a response in some reduced antlerless opportunity in the Nile and bumping units. Because of that response, we feel like we can put that archery general antlerless opportunity back in place that was there before. So we are recommending that. We're recommending reducing some of the Blue Mountain bull permits. That's approximately a 20 to 25% increase. That isn't because we've had a major decline, but because we took advantage fairly aggressively in 2012, took advantage of the surplus bull population that we felt like we had at the time, and now we need to level that out so we don't overdo the harvest on the bull population. As we mentioned on deer, we're adjusting special permits up and down via the allocation formula. those hunts that are offered to all three user groups. We are recommending adjusting antlerless opportunity to address agricultural damage issues. And we're also recommending reducing some of the antlerless opportunity in Mount St. Helens to try to stabilize that situation. Parallel to all of the hoof disease situation that we've been dealing with, as you all recall and you've adopted in the last 4 or so years, we've been very aggressively hunting the Mount St. Helens population to try to get that population down to a population level that's more in tune with its available habitat. So those are the primaries. On the floor changes that I have for you, if you'd follow along with me, please. First one I have for you is on page 5. This is a general season adjustment. On page 5, under the early archery season for Western Washington, we would recommend that we remove GMU 407 from the 3-point minimum or antlerless section and create a new line, as I've got on the board up here, that would put that GMU in an any elk category for 2013 and for 2014. This is an attempt to address some of the damage issues that we've got going on up there through a general season. And you'll see several of these from me. Okay. On page 6, very similar recommendation, under the late archery Western Washington season, we're recommending to delete 407 from the 3-point minimum or antlerless category and move that down to the any elk line, as I've got it portrayed here. Same justification, trying to provide some reduction via antlerless harvest and also some harassment factor there in terms of the nuisance and damage situation. Same approach on page 7, under the early muzzleloader Western Washington season, we'd like to create a new line there that creates a season for GMU 407 again for 2013 and for 2014 with the legal elk being 3-point minimum or antlerless. Same rationale for that change. And then also on page 7, under the late muzzleloader season, Western Washington, also create a new line for GMU 407, 4 years, 2013 and 2014. Again, legal animal, 3-point minimum or antlerless. Same rationale for the floor change for the change. We're trying to address nuisance and damage on landowner properties. Part of what we're doing here is a collaboration between wildlife program, enforcement program, the landowners that are being impacted, and this has also been vetted with the tribal entities that are paying attention to this elk population. Our staff feel that once putting these seasons in place, that our enforcement, our wildlife folks, particularly our private lands folks, can connect hunters with landowners that are willing to have hunters come on their property and take some of these animals, provide some harassment and disturbance, get a little bit of a reduction, but it also is using the user groups that they're willing to tolerate on their land. And it's a part of the world where even though we have a modern firearm general season in this GMU, in these particular places, they're not necessarily conducive to modern firearm seasons. There's enough development, there's enough housing, there's enough agriculture and livestock that archery and muzzleloader are a better tool for us here. In addition, on the special permit side of things, if you'll go to page 23, please, under the quality category, the hunt choice named Green River, it's a Western firearm, modern firearm hunt. We'd like to recommend changing the date from October 27 to November 2nd. Change the current date, which is October 27 through November 2nd, change to November 9th through the 15th. We have several of these hunts in the Green River watershed, GMU 485, where we have to negotiate the dates with the watershed land managers. So there are only certain time periods where we have hunters gaining access to the watershed to do deer and elk hunting. And so we need to make that change to be consistent with those agreed upon dates. Excuse me. On page 24, also under the quality category, the hunt choice called Quinault, which is a Western modern firearm season, we recommend that the initial date of September 16 through 20 be changed to September 23rd through 27, and that would avoid an overlap between the modern firearm season and an archery deer season. And if everybody kept up with me, if there are any questions, I'm happy to answer them if I can.
Commissioner Duvia.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Jerry, what do you anticipate the impact of the hoof rot on the population of that herd? And secondly, should we be making any modifications to be proactive because of the hoof rot?
Answering the first question, I think it definitely is having a population impact. There's no question about that. We're starting to see lower numbers in our survey work, and we're seeing more impacted animals in our survey work. So yes, it's having an impact. A proportion or a percentage, I don't think I'm in a position to say how big of an impact. But it's definitely having a population impact. In terms of changing the hunting season structure that we have right now, I'm going to reiterate what the director said earlier, that because we don't have a lot of results in, we don't know exactly what this malady is. Whether we were to go to a far less aggressive hunting season or a very aggressive hunting season really hinges on figuring out what the problem is first. And so right now, no, I would say that we don't need to be making any hunting season changes today. If the results that we're seeing in April, May, June are suggesting to us that something different needs to be done, then that would probably put us in a position to coming back to the commission and asking for some emergency rule adjustments.
Okay. Commissioner Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have several questions. There was a question asked by the public this morning that sort of intrigued me, and I just wondered if you had an opinion on that. And their suggestion was that with all these diseased animals, why should we be killing the healthy ones? They may have some resistance, and wouldn't we want to get rid of the diseased ones so it didn't spread? Do you have any comment on that?
Well, again, until we know what the real source of the problem is, I don't think we can answer that. Whether we would want to be stockpiling quote-unquote good elk that might have some resistance. We're just not in a position to know that yet. And so from the same vein, culling a bunch of afflicted animals, at this point, we don't know that that's useful or effective or is going to do any good. And so that would be an awfully dramatic management approach. And so we would really want to know what the problem is and be on very solid ground before we did something like that.
On the Kalakum, looks like the herd numbers are almost 1,000 animals over what would be a preferred population level there. I think the total population on the this year's count was 5,700, and the preferred would be what, 46 approximately?
Correct. 46, 47, 50 in that.
You've changed the antlerless take from what, 40 to 150. That's a pretty dramatic change. And what effect do you think that'll have on the population? I mean, taking that many antlerless.
We actually recommended increasing the antlerless for all three user groups, for the modern hunters, for the archery hunters, and for the muzzleloader hunters. Let me say that we're not trying to get back down that green line of 4750 in one hunting season. So I think it will help. I think it will have some impact. But as a whole, the population is doing fairly well. And so we'll try these increased antlerless levels and see what they do for us and see what the populations. We have folks, even folks that are serving on our Game Management Advisory Council who live over there and interact with these elk on a daily basis, and they keep reminding us, stop saying we have a problem with the Clockham elk herd. We don't have a problem with the Clockham elk herd. And so they're kind of poking fun at us, but their point is that overall total population, we are definitely above objective. Where the challenge is for us is still meeting that post-hunt bull subpopulation objective.
Okay, with that said, there's now a documented wolf pack in the Wenatchee area that I assume will be feeding on those elk. Do you see them taking that population down as well?
Don't know. Remains to be seen. A lot of that will depend on the size of the pack and how that pack develops over time and if more packs establish. But it would certainly be a source of mortality, and so any source of mortality is going to have some level of population impact.
Thank you.
Their questions, comments? Commissioner Duvia?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move to amend WAC 2322835 and WAC 2322860 as proposed and amended by floor amendments.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
The motion's been seconded by Commissioner Smith.
Hold up our end.
To amend WAC 2322858 and WAC 2322860 as proposed and amended with floor amendments. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Say no. Motion carries.